bad. The last two sentences of the commentary with respect to this, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Show John Byrne for me, no. Now, may we have a motion adopting section one in its entirety?
So moved.
You've heard the motion, we'll call the roll.
Judge Byrne.
Aye.
Senator Byrne.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Chandler.
Clark.
Yes.
Frost.
Aye.
Foss.
It'd be a baseball pitch in the World Series.
Johnson.
Aye.
Knight.
Aye.
Young.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman.
Aye. Carry. Section two.
Sign that to Lee Johnson to carry.
Chairman, I'd like to point out that your debate was not entirely wasted, but I got a beautiful examination question out of that one.
Well, good. I'm glad we were helpful, George. Roger?
Page five. We'll take section, we'll take them one at a time. Section two is bribe giving. We divide the basic bribery statute, two statutes, bribe giving and bribe receiving. Section two is bribe giving. Person commits a crime of bribe giving if he offers, confers, or agrees to confer any pecuniary benefit upon a public servant with the intent to influence the public servant's vote, opinion, judgment, action, decision, or exercise of discretion in his official capacity.
I can ask a question. This department can't take the contribution if the guy reports it.
If it's a report, a campaign contribution, it's not a pecuniary benefit.
All right. Now, Mr. Chairman, I want to think out loud and tell you what's been bothering me about this. We look at the crime that's described here. Now, it doesn't have any culpable state attached to it there. So we go back to the general principles of liability, culpability, and we read, a person is not guilty of a crime unless he acts with a culpable mental state with respect to each material element of the crime that necessarily requires a culpable mental state. Alright. So then we go back to the definitions there. And a culpable mental state means intentionally, knowingly, recklessly, or with criminal negligence, as these terms are defined in section 7, 8, 9, and 10 of this section. So then we go to section 7, which defines intentionally or with intent when used with respect to a result or to conduct prescribed by a statute defining a crime, means that a person acts with a conscious objective to cause the result or to engage in the conduct so described. Now, at about this point, Mr. Chairman, I'm lost.
Are you through thinking loud?
It isn't intentional anyway, it's knowing your thoughts to yourself.
Well, we got three or four more. I'm talking about how I'm plagued by the unwieldiness.
You've got me lost, it's where you're lost. Where are you
where
lost?
Where did you start from?
Well, the present bribery statute is a little bit more simple because it talks about a person who corruptly.
Well, this says with the intent to influence.
The intent to influence.
Well, let me ask Don then, or Roger, do we even have to go back to the section on culpability in order to get the requisite intent?
Oh, yeah. Well, to the extent that we have used the words with the intent in here, and we define intentionally or with intent in our basic culpability section. To that degree, you have to go back.
But that's all the further.
But I think this encompasses culpability.
Well, but with intent to influence.
Well,
somebody.
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe I can.
It has to corruptly influence.
No. If he pays to influence, it is bad whether it's corrupt or incorrupt.
Look, if I send
corrupt just by the fact that there's money involved.
If I send $500 to Bob Packwood and say, would you please
vote to restore the depletion allowance to 27.5%, that's bribe giving. But if I send $500 to Packwood and I say, I hope you vote right on the tax bill, I can't see how anybody would say that's bribe giving. Because in the one instance, I have the intent to influence his vote, and in the other, I don't. I'm just giving him $500. I don't know why I'd ever do that.
The corrupt part. If you say corruptly, I think what you're having to do then is leave it up to the jury to decide whether this is particularly a bad conduct or not, whether they agree in this particular instance with it, whether they were on this side or that side of the issue. But if you say it's bad business to give a guy money to influence his vote, then all you got to prove to him is that the money was given and was for the purpose of influencing, whether they agree that that 27.5% is right or 20% is right or oil depletion is right or any of these others.
Well, I could say another way, that the money for influence is the corruption that the bribery was redundant. If you say we added corruptly, provides money with the intent to influence, that's the corruption that we're trying to stop. Is
the act of giving the money, whether it's designed
to get influence.
All right, okay.
So we're just saying it a different way.
I have no problem.
I move we approve section 2.
Okay. Thanks, Bob, anyway.
I think the records will show that Senator Burns is now going to resume thinking he's bribed.
Mr. Vice Chairman, I would like to say I was going to think out loud that I get a horse laugh.
Well, you have to be awful careful when judges accuse you of that.
The second paragraph of your commentary, this commentary is according to Judge Kandler.
I got told last time.
Roger, what does it mean? The second paragraph?
Yeah, these two areas are ambiguous. Agreed. Then in sub 2, parentheses 2, we come down back again to the or political support. Alleged bribe is political support. And I thought we had these goals pretty well riddled 2 hours ago, but it's back in here again. Are you meaning by the commentary statement that it is or is not? You're saying it is ambiguous, and I agree.
Well, I was just saying in the commentary that there's a problem in those circumstances when you use the word corrupt as your word of culpability.
So we left out corrupt, so one or two are really
Well, then, can we just end that paragraph out?
Well, what do you mean?
I looked through your commentary. I couldn't find anything when you did talk about log rolling and this kind of thing.
Well, I've got a bit of comments.
Yeah, we're going to put some more comment to section one.
The garbage for that. Isn't the legislature's treating vote for vote?
Well, since some of them might have one, I'd just like to know now.
We're approving these things section by section and rewriting the commentary. Yes,
we ought to revise that old thing about I care not who writes the nation's law so long as I can write the commentary.
Well, Chandler's one of the dots in this commentary. Dave, what was your point?
Well, my point is that second paragraph of the commentary under A, summary, doesn't tell us a doggone thing.
Oh, well, second. Third.
They're saying we aren't using corruptly, okay, agreed. Then it's saying it's ambiguous if you do use it, and then it's throwing back in these 2 points that we had so much trouble with before.
I don't see.
Well, I wouldn't do any violence to the commentary to delete paragraph
out. Move the delete.
I think it's a
or just take out
four
political
support. Take out all the examples. Just say
how about war of political support? Wouldn't that not?
The third paragraph, standing by itself, covers really what we're talking about. Eliminate the use of corruptly and prohibits without qualification giving or receiving a pecuniary benefit to influence the second.
Well, why would you say the term corruptly is not used because it's ambiguous?
I move, Mr. Chairman, the commentary be amended by deleting all after the word ambiguous and inserting a period there. Why not strike that whole paragraph?
Yeah, strike that whole paragraph. If you want to keep them ambiguous, why put after roughly in the next paragraph, comma,
which is ambiguous, comma, and...
I move to amend the Attorney General's motion because it is ambiguous.
See, the thing is, if...
No, it's not a or already.
If in looking to the commentary here, they're confused as to why we eliminate correctly, they can look to the minutes and see...
Yes.
That we were confused.
Well, I moved to amend the minutes.
Now we have three categories. Statute, the commentary, and the minutes.
I was going to they're all
modifying the other.
Great important.
And they've got Uturi and Hi-Fi on that.
All those in favor of deleting the second paragraph under A, the commentary, say aye.
Aye.
Harry.
Beat my logical that I will approve of section 2.
Are you ready to vote on section 2? Call roll.
Judge Burns?
Aye.
Sandra Burns?
Aye.
Carl?
Aye.
Chandler?
Aye.
Clark?
Yes.
Ross?
Aye.
Bob?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Knight?
Aye.
Young?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. I suggest, Mr. Clark, that you become a member of the legislature so you know how to say aye.
As a poor board member, we say yes.
Section 3.
Bribe receiving, this is broken down into two different paragraphs. A person commits a crime of bribe receiving if, while a public servant, he one solicits any pecuniary benefit with the intent that his vote, opinion, judgment, action, decision, or exercise of discretion as a public servant will thereby be influenced. Or two, accepts or agrees to accept any pecuniary benefit upon an agreement or understanding that his, etc., will thereby be influenced.
Or what if you say solicits, accepts, or agrees to accept?
Well, that's originally how it was drafted. We had a problem.
Just as a matter of grammar, would it be better to say a public servant commits the crime of bribe receiving gift rather than being redundant, saying a person while a public servant?
I think so.
Yes.
Of course, it doesn't, not the way it's written, help the problem that you were talking about earlier, about a lawyer who is a public servant part of the time. Not the rest of the time. That's just not the way it's written.
This is only acting sub one. Is what did you say? As a public servant will thereby be influenced. I think it's covered in those two.
The only thing I was thinking is that this strengthens your concern or helps your concern about the lawyer who's acting as a lawyer, not acting as a legislator. When he is
the only person that can be accused of bribe receiving is a public servant. That's right. And the definition of schools by consultants.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, you must have a mic.
What happens in the case of the candidate for office who doesn't report his contribution or just takes money for his own benefit?
But if you've got the candidate
they don't report it.
Who takes money for his own benefit, then most often in those cases, bribery is involved.
What?
For example, in the Senate, I don't think there was bribery involved. No. There's just a misappropriation campaign.
Well, suppose you're running for office and I give you $50,000 on the basis you get elected, you're going to do what I want you to do.
If I don't report, and you don't report it.
Why is it bribery? It has occurred before you're a public servant.
Well,
as a public servant, he's running.
Under our definition, public servant. A person elected or appointed to become. Oh, excuse me.
No.
Appointed or elected. Yeah, he had to be elected or appointed first, right?
Yeah, I don't know if that would happen.
You would be a public servant after the primary, wouldn't you?
Not elected or appointed now.
Oh, yeah, you're elected to be a candidate.
You're a nominee. You're elected to be a nominee. You're not elected to be a nominee.
Yeah, I remember I brought that up. Under our definition of public servant, I don't think a candidate who's not office holder at the time is included as a public servant.
If you got it on November the 30th, it's okay.
Well, November the 5th, you don't have to report it anymore.
Right? So you better bribe freshmen, because that's... So
how about looking at sub 4, sub 2? No defense of the person sub of the influence is not qualified because he did not assume the office.
Well, he doesn't assume office until he's sworn in after the first year.
Excuse me, your public servant definitely does not.
It doesn't. You're right.
It doesn't. Bad thing is, it doesn't even include the guy who won the election, but he's not sworn in.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
The person elected.
Or appointed to become a public servant, although not yet occupied.
Oh, I see. Okay. That's true. You're right about that. Okay. So,
but until November 5th, the.
It's like I would smite you for it, not SI's time. I would drive you if you were like
that. I don't know why we shouldn't include candidates.
It's a practical matter. You're opening up what you were worried about before.
Yeah, exactly. No, you still got the contribution problem. So I'm talking about just a guy who gives you $50,000
and puts
it in the pocket.
Yeah, is that a pretty common thing around here? Yeah. Ruin it in the dark.
All right, the unemployment center.
What office?
You. Well, you're saying he still fights on the cup taxes. That's why no longer remains.
But then he won't take office, would he?
What?
He wouldn't if he doesn't.
Well, I'm unopposed for district attorney of Benton County.
And you put the $50,000 in your pocket.
Right?
You don't report
it. It's not reported.
No, it's not a gift. It's
just a gift. Just a gift.
I filed for district attorney. I'm running unopposed. You give me $50,000 when I go to my pocket.
Don't report it.
It's not a campaign contribution. It's just $50,000.
You mean it's not a campaign contribution?
It's a pure, unadulterated bribe. The only thing is it occurred before I have taken office or before I'm elected.
Well, then, the other way around.
I mean,
if I ever hold
it. It's not a contribution. It's not for political expenditures. Personal news.
Per diem before I get the
dog.
Yeah, don't you have another speech?
Roger, what, can you respond to that?
He never got $50,000.
Would you reduce the amount a little?
I always
say
a
big
term.
There's that $3 million budget for
all your money. I mean, in response to why a candidate is not included as a public servant.
Well, do you agree with me that the situation I described would not be a crime?
Yeah.
Right. Sure. It would not be a crime.
And I can think of instances where it's a very real possibility.
But if we include that group as a public servant, we're back in this area again.
The reason that conditionally that has never been covered is that at the time of the consideration, there's no official capacity to act.
Well, look,
it's more in the
a personal
realm of the speculative.
Yes, be sure your SOB will stand pitched.
Then whether it's this kind of a situation, where somebody was paid to run an office. And then later, the group that pays him to run the office later makes a political contribution. This is just strictly a pecuniary benefit for the guy to run for office.
Well, let's take it, stretch a little further. Christmas
and that's
gift,
not
a potential
candidate. I'm sure it happens.
Would you think that should be a crime for a $50 Christmas gift to a potential candidate who hasn't even filed yet?
Ben even made up his own mind. Oh, it could have been 1932. There's no time requirement on it.
Only for Christmas before the election.
Well, you could have, though, Tony. The guy, the person, I argue the second one raises problems because you've got the employer who says, I'll pay a sufficient salary to
Keep your time off from your job.
I think where we get hung up on this $50 Christmas gift is we're talking about bride giving and bride receiving. As far as not, if it's a, is it a $50 Christmas gift or is it a $50 paying in $50 so when he is elected he will do a certain thing?
In other words, the guy could, if we try to include a potential candidate, not because let's not get into the question of whether he's declared or not. That's a bummer word, it's not worth even taking time on. So it's a potential candidate. How far back do you go? You need no intent on the part of the recipient to get it. He may not even want to run for office. But somebody somewhere feels that if I give this guy $100, he may run, and I'm going to try and win his friendship and influence.
I'm going to hold myself out as the radio potential candidate for every person
who has. Well,
that's
a nice problem.
Let's go on.
Now that the Attorney General has thought out loud.
No, that was not a thought. Well, how about this situation, where someone is nominated, unopposed, and John Doe comes along and gives him $100. That's all that happens. Now, if you're going to bring him into this field, you have to prove the intent on the part of the giver before he can be guilty of bribe giving. He's not a public servant, so under the statute as we have it here, the proposal, there is no crime. And
likewise, but it'd be clearly, since I'm giving you the $100, because I want you to vote for this measure.
All right, and in that situation, he would not be covered. How could we bring that in without doing violence to our practice of that?
We do it by saying that
you nominee or declared candidate.
A public servant has.
You mean to include those people?
Well, in other words, we'd let the candidates who don't get elected off, but the ones who get elected.
How about broadening C to C page 1 to a person nominated, elected, or appointed?
Mm-hmm. This thing that a person nominated, elected, or appointed, I think that's
not yet occupying or elected
position. Given to an unopposed candidate at the primary for the purpose of a bribe, that's our assumption. Mm-hmm. Not as a campaign contribution, because that's covered, it's formed at the office.
Yeah.
Now this comes to light as a defense against the Corrupt Practices Act. He says, no, it was a bribe, I'm sorry. That's a good defense of corrupt practices. But then our press is going to go out of their mind, and this, I think, is destroyed.
But the press doesn't sit on a jury.
Well, but this guy, the only way it comes up is if he raises it as a defense to a corrupt practice prosecution. He says, hello, it's not only $50,000 for a bribe. It was a bribe. It wasn't a contribution. Can you picture that happening?
No, I can't.
Well, where it's going to happen is
that it's in office. That's where it's going to come out. What's going to happen
there?
Yeah.
People we call them. I think they're weak
persons. Bennett versus Bennett.
Well, Roger suggests, or pursuant to somebody's suggestion down there, Molly, to amend 3C on section 1, I agree.
Nominees.
Person nominated, elected, or appointed to become a public service, alone servant, although not yet elected or occupying the position,
a
person, well, I'll make that motion, Mr. Chairman.
Even though that it could happen very rarely, at least we covered the situation.
Well, I think the danger is that when you're mucking up the rough practice approach to pulling candidates and contributions.
Well, how?
Well, we're throwing back in this thing. Everybody's running for office is not yet a public servant. We're talking about the $50,000 bribe.
Yeah.
Substantial problem. I like that word, substantial. Leave that alone. But now we're back into the non-substantial. The guy who goes out leaves problems and says, sure, I'm in favor of the LEO and legislative program, and I'll promise to vote bang, bang, bang if you'll support me.
Bang, bang, bang.
We've opened up this whole can of worms that concerned our Attorney General some hours ago. And the reason we said there wasn't a great problem was because that was a problem with corrupt practices. And we didn't want to get into this area, so now we're back into it.
Well, I agree. I mean, we're concerned with the bribery because it would be reported as a campaign contribution and the public would be aware of it and the recourse would have polled if they didn't like who was supporting this particular candidate.
Only if there was a form of money.
No, I don't care.
Suppose the teachers all say, well, we'll take our Saturdays and Sundays between now and election to go out and
the
doorbell.
Well, services in the form of volunteer help.
Dave, how would that muddy up the waters of your project? Because this is on bribery that we're talking about here, this particular statute. We're not talking about the Corrupt Practices Act. That's a separate thing. There has to be reporting and everything else, forfeiture of office. Here, all we're concerned about is what constitutes bribery. And if we insert that a nominee is a public servant, I don't see how we're doing, we're hurting the Corrupt Practices Act.
We're back to our definition of pecuniary benefits.
Yeah, but don't you get around this pecuniary benefit problem? Right. Like, you're talking about the guy that takes up lunch or something. Don't you get around that by saying that the intent element is not there? Well, it's too de minimis that it would be enough to swing a guy's vote.
That's for substantial.
Well, Carson won't stand for substantial.
The only thing I could ask, if you want to have fun with substantial, you bring in conflict of interest. That's where you're truly drawn out. Yes, all afternoon yesterday. Until we got the prostitution. So that.
But isn't that the answer from the small benefit?
What's that?
Where's the proof of intent? The guy takes me a lunch. It's so de minimis in its amount, it obviously is not going to influence my decision.
It's the argument that accompanies the lunch. Mm-hmm. Changes your mind.
We've already covered the situation of someone elected but not yet occupying office.
Right, but we've got from November 5th to January 1st.
So all we're doing is going back to May
28th.
Yeah, but there's a real difference, it seems to me, though, because it's bad for that guy to do it because he's in a position to do something through this office.
Yeah,
he has the office.
It's. Oh, I think about the unopposed candidate.
Yeah.
He has the office too.
Well, yeah, I think I have a solution for my problem.
All right.
We're back to definitions. The definition of benefit is the one that concerns me when you're talking about gain or advantage. Not pecuniary, because that is a contribution. But no place in this draft can I find the use of being a crime of offering a benefit. It's always pecuniary benefit. So why do we have a definition of benefit?
It clarifies the definition of pecuniary.
So that you're going to have the next definition of pecuniary.
Would there be a lesson?
At least logically. But we don't need it. If we are making a conferring of a benefit, a crime, or the crime of bribery, or of offering to give or receive, we don't need a definition of the word benefit. Why do we need a definition of the word pecuniary?
The purpose of
defining takes care of our political score.
What's the purpose of defining benefit? Make it clear that we included the gain or advantage redounding the benefit of some third person as well as.
Well, do you
decide this case this way? I'll give your son a job.
Under our definition, benefit.
Hey, there's sunshine. Well. Did I hear a motion to the effect that the word nominee, would you restate that motion?
Well, to amend section 3, to insert the word nominated after person.
Well, Mr. Chairman, before we take a vote on it, I appreciate very much if Don or Roger would explain to what extent this particular subject was canvassed in subcommittee and what the subcommittee thought about it.
As far as the person who was not yet elected or appointed to the position, my recollection of the subcommittee discussion on this was that we specifically wanted to exclude this kind of individual because it was too speculative, and that we were, and this plus the fact that we felt that this should be left to the Corrupt Practices Act to take care of this kind of situation.
But did you contemplate an unopposed nominee?
No, we did not. But of course, if you put nominee in there, you're not saying just an unopposed nominee. You would be encompassing any nominee.
Sorry.
Which leads me to the next question. How about a candidate for nomination?
If guys opposed, it's going to be a 50-50 deal. You're not going to have the bribe.
Take a DA who's unopposed, person who's unopposed for district attorney, and some bail bondsman has a $25,000 bond on somebody that the bondsman knows has left the country. And he knows that when the appeal is handed down about the time the DA unopposed nominee takes office, that the motion to forfeit that bail, so he's in a position right then and there to bribe that district attorney nominee. I think it's a very real problem.
Why don't we say unopposed nominee?
No, I mean, the same thing could apply. I mean, I can go around to the two candidates.
Well, either that or let's face it, there are still some counties, depending on not necessarily the DA now that it's nonpartisan, that getting the primary election is tantamount to get to winning, even though you may have opposition.
What about judgeships?
You may be in May.
The primary ends.
This is not true of Marion County.
Well, the primary will end most district attorney races.
Well, we're not going to hurt things too much by including both the opposed and unopposed nominee.
Oh, I don't think we're going to hurt anything.
You've heard the motion.
Well,
Representative Frost.
As long as we leave the definition of benefit as it is in Section 1, we're getting into the same situation of anyone who says, I will benefit you during a campaign by getting 10 people to go out and knock on doors. You will agree to support my position. And you're opening that thing up every time a speech is made in a hotly contested race, or somebody goes to labor and says, yes, I'll vote for your program, I'm in favor of the working man. And then they provide some people to go out and help them, whether it's in a canvas of... There's all kinds of things you can do. You're going to have, you're building in beautiful situations for filing complaints for bribery.
Well, did you hear Roger earlier that the only reason for defining benefit separately from the pecuniary benefit is for simplification, so the pecuniary benefit will be more clearly understood. Supposing that we were to delete
benefit.
Section 1 benefit and add it in pecuniary benefit.
Right. Now that's the answer to the problem. And to put in the definition of pecuniary benefit also the advantage to a third person, which is about the only thing missing from the pecuniary benefit definition. It's pulled in by using the word benefit. I think we take care of the entire problem that way. And we can make it apply to nominees, unopposed, or opposed. Make no difference.
I think Roger may make the same motion. Just to dry the last phrase down and put it into pecuniary benefit.
Right, I think that's the way to
handle it. Well, and that's probably supposed to be the first one first,
because the first one is dependent upon what you do.
Roger, do you...
You're talking about combining
yes.
the definition of benefit into pecuniary benefit.
Right, pecuniary benefit, leaving pecuniary in the form of money, but adding to it the advantage to the beneficiary or to a third person.
Yeah, that can be done. Pecuniary benefit means gain or advantage to the beneficiary or to a third person, shows the desired consent of the beneficiary in the form of money, probably commercial interest or gain.
I don't see how it helps, but it doesn't hurt either.
The thing, Mr. Chairman, for one reason, is if we define benefit, then as I missed in the subcommittee, or we threw it out, that's the last year of benefit. We don't, might as well define what gross negligence is.
We don't say it's benefits of crime.
That's one of the most commonly employed
crimes. Would you withdraw your motion so that we, there's no objection? With reference to nominated Representative Frost is a little afraid if we pass this, then we will combine his. Representative Frost moves that we combine subsection 1 and 2 so that the definition of benefit appears under pecuniary benefit.
Well, no, Representative Frost was moving that we reconsider the vote by which we approve section 2.
What I'm saying is that we rewrite pecuniary benefit as it is now, but to include advantage to a third person. But it still would have to be in the form of money, property, commercial interest, or economic.
Okay.
Roger stated it properly.
Yeah. You know, that's okay, Mr. Chairman. I'll go along. However, I think we're overlooking one thing. One of the most commonly employed bribery devices, and anybody that's familiar with Washington knows that this is a fact, is getting a girl for somebody. Now,
secretary?
Yeah, right.
What would you do with the girl?
Right. It's not for your commercial interest or economic gain, but it's certainly a bribery device.
Well, when this definition was first on the first preliminary draft, we used the term I recall whose primary significance is economic gain, and that's what we're really getting at. We're not really getting at getting a girl.
In other words, it's okay.
Okay.
I mean, you have to draw a line somewhere,
strike
whether it's
that.
For lunch or the girl.
That belongs to the prostitution.
Yeah, we got a law on that too, John. Why don't you come on over to our subcommittee?
Well, I don't.
Yeah, but that's just kind of a species of consideration. What's the difference between getting a $50 girl and having a $50 dinner? There is a difference.
Are you asking?
Johnson left too early.
Well, you spoke with some authority.
Listen, Roger, I'm glad we didn't have you work on sex offense.
You've heard the motion. All in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried. Senator Burns moves that the word nominated be inserted prior to elected. Nominated, comma, elected. 3 sub C. That's the motion.
That's the motion.
All in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Carried.
Now that Judge Burns has been thinking out.
We had approved this section 1 before this amendment, so I think perhaps that we had best call the roll on approval as amended. Call the roll.
So this is section 2 as amended.
Section 1.
Judge Burns.
Aye.
Senator Burns.
A.
Yes.
Chandler.
Yes.
Clark.
Yes.
Ross.
Yes.
Hawes.
Aye.
Knight?
Yes.
Young?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
You won me over.
Then we're ready to vote on 2 and 3 now.
Now, yes. Can we vote on section 2?
Two.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Section 3. Will someone move on?
I move that we approve it.
You've heard the motion.
Was that subject to the correction of the grammatical social statement contained in section 3?
Would you state that so she can get down?
Public servant.
In section 3, strike person, insert public servant. After the word if, strike the balance of line, insert he, colon.
All right, the motion is on section 3 as amended. Would you call the roll, please?
All right, Judge Burns. Senator
aye.
Burns. Carson.
Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Clark.
Yes.
Ross.
Aye.
Hawes.
Aye.
Knight.
Aye.
Young.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Section 4.
It is no defense to a prosecution.
These are our defenses. Any prosecution under section 2.
Right giving.
It is a defense that the defendant offered, conferred, or agreed to confer the pecuniary benefit as a result of the public servant's conduct constituting extortion or coercion. And then number two states it is not a defense under both sections 2 and 3, that the person sought to be influenced was not qualified to act in the desired way, whether because he had not assumed office, lacked jurisdiction, or for any other reason.
In other words, it's not a crime for me to give a bribe if Carson twisted my arm.
It's extortion, because it wipes out the crime of extortion.
But it's not a defense if I'm giving a bribe and he didn't have the authority to do what I'm asking him to do.
No,
that's... Well, if I solicit a bribe from you saying that I'll pardon your brother-in-law and him, and I accept the bribe even though I don't have the authority, I solicit the bribe, even though I don't have the authority to come across. I can't raise that as a defense and say it can't be a bribe. I accepted the money, but I couldn't have done it either.
Yeah, well, there's no defense that he isn't giver either.
No, because you're intent is still probably...
Yeah, if you happen to pick the wrong man, you misjudged the county line where the crime was committed and went the wrong EA.
Is there a possibility of bribe receiving being the result of extortion or coercion?
Say that again.
Is there a possibility of bribe receiving, the recipient receiving it by reason of some type of extortion or coercion?
Unless you give me $5,000, I'm the one to see
Here's $5,000 and use better.
And you better take it or I'll tell your wife.
Yeah. Right.
I can't imagine that kind of circumstance.
Or I'll say that I bribed you for the election.
Did the subcommittee, did that come up again?
No.
No. I think it's covered, as Chairman Truman, from this standpoint, that if the fellow, the recipient, does not accept it, and with an agreement or understanding that his vote, opinion, or judgment, action, decision would be influenced thereby. In other words, if he can convince the jury that he accepted it, not because he agreed that he would change his influence.
Oh,
but,
I see.
But because
he was forced to.
Forced to. Cover.
Yeah, I think that would cover it.
Yeah. For instance, suppose somebody came up and slipped an envelope with $500 in your pocket to fix you up. I don't think that, I mean, he has actually physically received the $500, but I don't think he gets under the crime of receiving a bribe just because he's got $500 in his pocket.
I think you're right.
We have a draft on extortion yet.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, by the committee.
And we have a section on coercion.
What's your pleasure with section 4? Looks okay.
Will they approve it?
Any further discussion? Call the roll on section 4.
Judge Brim?
Aye.
Cindy Brim?
Aye.
Carson?
Aye.
Chandler?
Yes.
Clark?
Yes.
Ross?
Aye.
Paul?
Aye.
Knight?
Aye.
Young?
Aye.
Chairman?
Aye.
Harry? Young, under section 5, Mr. Chairman, they can get the whole lobby for that one. We warn you past official misconduct.
John, what about these sections we discussed yesterday?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So what's new?
Can I take the
letter,
sir?
Yes.
Okay.
This is called
the
first. Everybody have copies of
it? Yeah, I've got copies here. We just have to pass around.
Well, Mr. Chairman, yesterday in the subcommittee number 1, considering obstructing governmental administration, there were two sections, one bribing a witness and one bribe receiving by a witness, that we considered and felt unanimously that should be part of the bribery section rather, the bribery article rather than the instructing governmental administration article. So I'm going to move that we amend them in to sections 5 and 6 of this bribery article now.
Renumber them?
Yeah. Not everybody has copies. Don's going to hand them out. They're on page 25. But they go very much in line with 3 and 4, I think, right, Don? Or 2 and 3.
Yeah, they're very comparable, except they deal with
bribing witnesses. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion's carried.
Okay, section 6. Renumber.
Now, Don, how about these other? We have other bribery statutes in other articles. We have commercial bribery and sports bribery.
Just a question of placement
and commercial fraud
in the code. Whether you're going to feel that since you're talking about bribery, you should put everything that involves bribery of any kind in the same article, or whether you're going to look at the nature of the crime, whether it involves a business situation. And in this case, with the witnesses, we placed it originally under interference with governmental administration because of the. We felt it would impede the administration of the criminal justice or the working of the courts that involve witnesses.
Well, how about your arts?
And so it's
jurors
in
our definition of public
service. Yeah,
you put jurors in there. Yeah.
Well, so I think you're suggesting logically that perhaps witnesses should be also.
But how about the other bribery? How's the commission members feel? Do you think that we should place all of the bribery statutes under one article?
Well, I'm not sure the other two really have that much directly to do with the function of government.
Well,
it's
this section is bribery involving the influence of conduct of some governmental activity. Court or something else, and the other, the commercial bribery, really is a crime against property.
Ancillary to this.
Wouldn't it be easier for someone who's looking up the law simply to look in one place under bribery for everything connected with it, or would that make any?
That's where you're going to look first.
Yeah, that was one of our considerations. I think people logically would look under the bribery.
Reason for this. Last motion that you just approved.
But wouldn't any decent index
under bribery would have that?
Under bribery, sports bribery, commercial bribery, and garden variety bribery.
In Oregon, if it's indexed the way that the garden statutes would also have a cross reference to see also counties generally.
You know, as much work as has been done on the index to ORS, it still isn't worth a hoot.
If you can think like the indexer.
Well, they should have a little preamble then. Here's how the indexer was thinking.
Indexer's thought.
That'll be one.
Well, what the indexer needs is a commentary.
Yeah, Molly Carson sets me to work with.
Well, let's recess until 1:30. Then we'll take up this. Well, your motion was.
Subcommittee. They didn't have particularly any strong feelings one way or another on this section.
Dave.
Roger, doesn't the original two crimes of receiving and giving a bribe contemplate a future consideration? So it agrees to accept?
And you have consideration that.
Okay, well, that's the second question. It's contractual. But you can't have good consideration for that in the past. You can't buy the present contract, which is contract law, the contract bribery being part of the contract. To me, it indicates that if you agree to give a bribe, whether it's corrupt now and pay later, or corrupt now and pay now, both those situations are in section 2 and section 3. And so why do you need a situation where you say at a future time someone is expected to receive
this is a reward. And this goes to take care of the situation where the district attorney really should do something that lets the statute of limitations go by.
Third third paragraph of the summary give two examples.
Where?
Paragraph three.
What about the general of the Army who was in cahoots with some big defense contractor, kind of in the federal
level? Or a bunch of sergeants.
And he leaves, and the minute he leaves, he gets a vice president's job with that firm. That's the kind of thing that's after.
No, there would be no past official misconduct.
Actually, he's having to try. Aren't you going to have, when you have a violation of his duty, it's going to have to be an actual violation of the statute.
This is a matter of.
It's a violation of the duty.
Any discretion.
Doesn't necessarily have anything to do with bribery.
Because there was no consideration passed in the head.
Well, I'm just thinking here, again, we're talking about, to use the hypothetical I used earlier. Suppose I sent $500 to Bob Packard and said, I want you to vote to restore the depletion allowance of 27.5%. That's right. Now, he votes to restore it to 27.5%, and I come along a little later and say, that was a darn good thing you did. Here's $500 to both of them. I take it that would not be rewarding past official.
That's not a violation of his legal duty. Legal duty.
You're both on our discretion.
And that's a discretionary. But it the thing that bothers me about this section is that it is suggested that that you can successfully defend by contending that you didn't receive pecuniary benefit until after the official action was completed. And yet, Section 3 makes it a crime to receive a bribe if he accepts or agrees to accept.
The problem there is there has to be a existing agreement or understanding prior to the time the judgment is effective.
Chairman?
Mr. Attorney General. Okay, there's a motion made to strike Section 5. Attorney Section
6. That's not. That's going to repeal. This would have repealed some of the statute.
That's right.
Of course, we will undoubtedly replace or will replace some of them. In other words, are we. By not adopting this, are we going to
leave the gap? I think our duty is for bribery statute coverage.
Well,
could
I just say that a lot
of defense
is,
I don't have any strong opinion about the defense side. This contrary points out where if you have a good example of the fire department inspector, and he goes out and he deliberately and intentionally does not report fire violations of the regulations. Doesn't do it. And he goes around, he doesn't do it. And then someone comes in and gives him something. And the ideal statute to prevent giving him something of value, which will probably encourage him to continue that type of conduct in the future, hoping that other people will respond the same way. Why
ex post facto bribe? Anybody who votes in favor of, they expect to receive.
Well, you're talking about voting. Let's talk about a clear violation of your legal duty.
Everybody overlooks fire inspection statutes and liability. They expect that there are these cases of violations that are happening.
That's what
I'm saying
about the
military.
Same thing. In the first place, you've got the public servant. Violated his loot limits and he's subject to liability and some sort of that, okay? Alright. And you go to him and you're going to give him the money because he did it. Point is that the conduct that we should look at? The fact that going up and you're rewarding someone for doing exactly doing something that they were legally not supposed to do.
Statute that makes it mandatory for this week. Sheriff's peace officers and force of gaming groups. When they're not done, you get a person rewarded after that exam.
Judge.
Mr. Chairman, is there in fact an evil existing in our society
which we seek to cure or prevent by this, how often does this set of facts occur in our society?
Let me answer.
I can see where some could occur. I
ought to answer his question by answering your question. Reading 162.240 in the context of the example down here in the paragraph at the bottom of the page, existing law doesn't cover the fire inspector who fails to report violations. I would think, probably, that the city codes might take care of that, or might maybe properly taken care of by dismissing that.
This would take care of those fire inspectors that were given a reward after.
There is a statute that prohibits acceptance of a fee or compensation after you've performed an act now, doesn't it? 162.240.
Well, 240 uses the language for services rendered. I construed that to mean that it could mean past, present, or future. So that if you accepted a fee for services rendered.
Dave?
I think the point of the whole thing is, in context, is that federal law should put penalties upon conduct which is detrimental to society as a whole. And here we've got an original bride giving and bride receiving statute. We have someone who agrees in the future to receive compensation or receives a doubt or misconduct. The friends are going to come back and say that we're going to reward misconduct. No preceding agreement. Because if there was an agreement before, he didn't misconduct, he would be bribery. Giving and receiving. Now saying that you reward stupidity or malfeasance or unknowingness or misconceptions of your duty, that replacing something that has no social consequence. If he was stupid and didn't report violations, then if somebody wants to put him on the payroll someplace, but he's stupid, fine. Where's the animals?
Carl,
let me ask this. Let me pose a question. Why is it that I don't cover the proceeding? Such a problem. They have a fire inspector. Third of the little inspector report violations. And you own a broker. Comes around three or four times more than the inspects. Our violations has not reported. What's the name of it? Now, here goes on. Christmas time comes, and when you're giving your annual Christmas gift to the mailman who delivers the mail, and the lady that cleans up the office, you also send out 10 cases of whiskey from the farmer's market. Still on the job, comes back next year, inspects, no discussion can be had. He inspects the premises again, occurs, early sees violations, he doesn't report them. We covered that thing, or is there no violation of law?
Well, I would think that particular situation could be covered in prior, because I think you could strongly argue that the jury would buy the 10 cases of whiskey not only for the past, but for his future inspections when he came from that year.
And you wouldn't be hard pressed to prove it. In fact, you'd argue before a jury, and it seems to me, do you really believe? He's rewarding this guy for his past on that?
Mr. Chairman,
rewarding for his past, because well, that guy's going to have the same head as next year as Halle
probably.
Well, these two sections are drawn from section 280.12 of the Model Penal Code. They call it compensation for past official favor, and I think some of their commentary might be of interest to you. They say, and as Roger does some of his commentary, soliciting or accepting pay for past official favor should be discouraged because it undermines the integrity of administration. Compensation for past action implies a promise of similar compensation for future favor. Apart from this implied bribery for the future, when some, quote, clients, unquote, or public servant undertake to pay him for favors, others who deal with the same public servant are put under pressure to make similar contributions or risk subtle disfavor. We have not gone so far here as to prohibit all gifts to public servants, a matter which for the most part should be handled through civil service regulations and non-penal disciplinary measures. nor have we here undertaken to deal with the question of private supplementation of public salaries or private compensation for services when an official is supposed to render, which an official is supposed to render gratis, where there is no payment for favoring the payor. Prophylactic regulations can appropriately be dealt with by special legislation supplementing our model provisions. Except for special legislation of the sort just mentioned, there is little legislative precedent for this section. The proposed section obviates the difficulty occasionally encountered in bribery prosecution when the defendant contends that he did not solicit or receive anything until after the official transaction had been completed. On the other hand, assuming that the official action really has not been influenced in advance by promise of gain, the consequence of the violation is less serious than this, and they grade this as a misdemeanor in law.
Well, the only place I can see that the real social problem coming up is when there is a general broadcast, say the fire inspectors, I can see this as a slow landlord, that anybody who doesn't report violations of liability can expect to receive a reward or an award. And yet that's the same thing that you have for rewards given for apprehension of criminals. Anybody who apprehends a John Doe will receive X number of dollars. Well, that's a contract, legally. And that's punishable in the bribery section of offering a bribe. The offer is made, it's accepted for a group, it's accepted by a member of the group, and then you're paid. He's punishable by bribery. I can say to a person with no contractual relationship that based upon your past misconduct, I'm not going to pay you. I don't see where the social problem exists.
So let me just take one from there. There are people that have a reputation in communities of giving gifts to policemen or firemen and so on. And this gets around through those circles. So a policeman stops the citizen on the street. There's a violation of the law. And he at that time feels in his mind that if he lets the person go on home about his business, that he will be rewarded, although there's nothing ever takes place. Now this statute will prohibit that. Now I can see that is a problem. That really does exist.
Well, I don't think, because it just seems to me that in almost any case, if you just say, now look, let's just recognize what human nature is all about. And people don't reward something that they didn't pay any consideration for, they get that they got gratis. They don't reward it. They're asking for something in the future. And I just, I can't imagine the case. Certainly, in this case, this guy gives these gifts out for this purpose.
Well, seeking to maintain his reputation as being a good guy who takes care of policemen. And that's the basis that it's done the next time. But that's also the same reason that the policeman let him go for this drunken driving or whatever it was this time.
It's the same theory of the reward. But you're not here. Well, we're catching people who don't like to give gifts to policemen.
You ready to vote on the motion? Motion is to delete section 5.
10-6.
Well, look. All right, we'll take them both together. All right, ready for the question?
First.
Everybody in favor of reading 5 and 6, say aye as your names are called.
Shouldn't be voted on separately. 6 vote. That talks about solicitation.
All right, let's take them one at a time. Let's take 5. Everybody in favor of reading 5, say aye as your names are called. Those opposed?
No.
Judge Burns?
This is on 5.
Yeah.
Chen?
No.
Clark?
No.
Frost?
Aye.
Paz?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Knight?
No.
Young?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. Carry. Section 6.
This section 6 is directed at the official public servant who accepts this rather than the bribe or
Do you see any difference?
Well, there's certainly a difference as it relates to 162.240, our present statute, I think. But we've got to give some consideration what we want to do with that section in our present law.
Thank you.
tell me the difference between 3 and 6? You can't have consideration past that.
We're not talking about contracts here. Bribery is given with the intent to influence. The guy doesn't have
another word to read.
Consideration.
Well, Roger, you drafted it. Do you see any essential difference between 5 and 6? It's just the inverse. 6 is just the inverse.
Policemen operate with discretion all the time.
All right.
And so they're going to make decisions not to arrest all the time.
Right.
Now, if they receive rewards from citizens for this, that, to me, is a wrongful act and a violation of their trust and should be penalized. And that's what this is all about.
The only difference is if you deleted Section 5 and retained Section 6, and you had prosecution under Section 6, then you would have a public servant that could be charged, while the party non-public servant who perhaps solicited and paid the reward could not be prosecuted.
Well, there's a special interest here because of the trust on the public officer.
Yes.
Well, Don, is it a real, I mean, you're more knowledgeable than any of us with police activity and conduct. Is it a real problem? I don't want to put you on the record as to whether you had to discipline anybody when you were sure of in your department.
It is a real problem in any police department that doesn't have effective control of such matters.
All right. Now, is it in the best interest of that police department to control it internally, as you did when you were sure, or to put it into the criminal courts, as we do under a statute like this?
Well, as of this moment, the art of policemanship has not arrived at the level that controls itself.
No.
Well, still, the question gets down to, Don, is me, you're talking about a situation that's very, very remote, the possibility that happening, and that it wouldn't be covered under Section 3.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask Don this question. You have indicated by your answer that this is a problem. Now, would you say that it is a problem in the sense that the police officer solicits money for past misconduct, or the problem that he is offered money and accepts it for past misconduct? Could you separate those two?
I'm not sure you really can separate it. It's a common practice in a number of large city police departments that policemen drop around to places that are obviously had in the past, and the officers had good information and evidence that he could have entered the district attorney, that there have been violations of the law, and received gratuities. This is a common practice in a number of large police departments. The President's Crime Commission documented this in a number of their studies and so on. There is no statement, there is no solicitation made for the gift. There is no statement that I will not prosecute you and take future evidence tomorrow, but it's just the fact that the gratuity is given because it's been overlooked in the past. That's fairly common.
But Don, that is still, it's still bribery.
All right, now,
you can still be bribed.
I can see a difference. Well, Policeman A has been assigned to a beat and he stops up and sees the matter on Friday and gets a check. And then next week he's taken off the beat. And he's never going to be back there again. He can't be prosecuted under 3.
And he still drops back and still gets paid off. And that knowledge permeates the entire department. And everybody knows that you're going to be taken care of after it's all over.
That's the same solicitation that comes about in offering a reward. We'll reward whoever finds John Dillon and brings him to justice. It's a group offer. That's covered under Sections 2 and 3.
Yeah, it's a post a pre-fact, a pre-offer before the guy has been brought in. This is the only way you're going to have some case.
There isn't solicitation by common knowledge.
That particular example is always nice for us, right?
If you apply a method, you hop in the cab and say, take me to the very manager.
Up again in connection with the abuse of office, then we can have that.
decision.
Okay.
Perjury.
Perjury.
Are you on the perjury?
Yep.
Perjury?
Page one. Okay, Roger.
Page one, section one. Subsection one, we incorporated the definition of benefit in public service.
We've got a problem right there.
I wonder there if we haven't used benefit here as opposed to pecuniary benefit. I think we have.
Where are we?
Well, we're on perjury.
But that's no particular problem. We can pull, I can just, can't we just define benefit?
Right here.
Here.
Okay.
You mean the same as,
We amended benefit and pecuniary benefit into one definition in bribery, and that one definition wouldn't be applicable here. So, tell him why not, Roger.
The way it's used in the perjury article, we need a broader definition. In other words, we're not talking about just pecuniary benefit. We're talking about any gain or advantage.
Unless I combine the two, and we don't have just a plain old benefit, the pecuniary benefits.
Well, that was my question on bribery. If we wanted to limit bribery just to pecuniary benefit, I bring up the practice of providing girls, which is a. But apparently, the subcommittee felt that that was.
Okay.
Legitimate form of bribery, or I mean the commission.
I want to report, Mr. Chairman, that while I'm not acquainted with the $50 lunch, I can tell you about a 90 cent lunch.
That's why you've been voting with Chandler this afternoon.
I didn't buy a white lunch today. I took note of that.
Okay.
I'll make a campaign on buy a lunch.
Well, Roger, why can't we have.
I'll tell you why. Section 4 is the only section that we use the term benefit, and when we look at that section, you may decide to use pecuniary benefit.
A person commits the crime of unsworn falsification if he knowingly makes any false written statement to a public servant in connection with an application for a pecuniary or other benefit. Oh no, you want other benefit in it. Well, your suggestion was to take and on sub one define benefit, eh?
Define benefit.
And pecuniary benefit.
Well, we can make reference to pecuniary benefit.
Or you could say as pecuniary benefit is defined in Article X applies to this article.
Right.
Do you make that motion, Mr.
Yes,
Chandler? All right. Mr. Chandler moves that sub 1 be amended to encompass the sub 1 of section 1 on page 1 of perjury.
That's your second red hand.
Does this have to do with, would this be false police reporting? Your section 4 on sworn falsification?
Could be. The motion is to take the definition of benefit, which appears in section 1 of bribery, and to make that sub 1 of section 1 here, to change section 2 here to read the definition of public servant. Is this right?
And pecuniary benefit
as used in the bribery section applies to this article.
And then I may suggest the chairman misstated my motion.
You make the motion.
Because I sure as Sam Hill don't want to include political campaign contributions in this one, too.
I'll go along with you.
And if we just incorporate by reference, we'll have great when we get into that, we'll have to pull ORS chapter 260 open. So I would move that
still
someone has read benefit means gain or advantage to the beneficiary or to a third person pursuant to the desire or consent of the beneficiary.
Okay, you've heard the motion. Everybody in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried.
Now, sub 2 then would be pecuniary benefit, means a benefit in the form of money, property, commercial interest, or economic gain, period.
You've heard the motion. Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Number 3 would then read the
definition. Just a second.
The only place that the word benefit would be applicable in this section would be in section 4, unsworn falsification.
I believe so. That's right.
You ready to vote now?
I would think it would be better to wait until we go through these other sections to see how they apply the definition of the mountain before it happens.
I think
that's the problem with section 4.
Okay.
My third motion would be, if I were to make it, then
thinking out loud,
that sub 3 would be the definition of public servant in article referring over to bribery and corrupt influence, which is applied to this article.
Now, Bob, I don't think we didn't adopt your second motion.
No, I say this would, would have to be the form. If we go through the benefit, pecuniary benefit, we'd have to renumber and go to public for number 3.
All right. Well, then the record should show that we have adopted, pursuant to your amendment, a new subsection 1. And with that, let's go to sub 2 and we'll come back to the definitions.
Well, excuse me now, you're going to.
I section 2.
Section
no,
one.
I'm sorry.
Section 2. 8-6.
Oh, I want to talk a little bit about the definition of material and the definition of statement, if I may.
All right.
Unless you want to bring this up later.
I think your suggestion, Dave, was that we bring up the definitions in the context of the particular sections. Isn't that right?
Well, this is a problem we had before. They put it back, they changed it 3 times, I recall, 3 seconds. Wouldn't it make more sense to read the definitions in context?
That's what we've been doing in subcommittee uniformly.
Good. And now I want to go to section 6, or section 2, page
6.
Yeah,
well, it isn't going to make a great deal of difference because section 2 and 3 are drafted in such a way that you're going to have to. These definitions are going to be very important. We're going to have to meet and refer back to them anyway. Section 2, a person commits the crime of perjury if he makes a false sworn statement, sworn statement being defined and then statement being separately defined, in regard to a material issue, material being defined, knowing it to be false. Section 3, false swearing, contains the same elements except with the absence of a material issue.
Okay, Jim.
The question I have on the definition of material is as defined, it means that which could have affected the course of any proceeding. And that language seems to me to be broader than the suggestion in the commentary. And it's my understanding in the case that in order to be material, it has to be substantial or important and so on. And I want to make sure that we end up with a language clear enough that as what comes along, it will not treat as material those things which are, which I would call insubstantial, but which could have affected the outcome of the proceeding. Because there's a lot of little nitpicky facts in the trial of the case that
that I wouldn't regard as substantial and yet could affect the outcome of the proceeding. I don't know whether it could anything would really affect the outcome of the substantial hearing.
Well, I mean, guys want to go free or not go free, it made the difference.
Well,
you said the decided, Jim.
Oh, that's another question.
You haven't got to that part.
Got to that part yet.
You're not satisfied with the definition.
Well, this thing's too broad, you mean?
I wonder if we're doing anything for it or against it, if we added a phrase substantially affected or some word like that.
They brought the bio.
They will die. You guys try.
Got two votes now.
Well, material matter is in the present statute, you know. The material isn't defined by statute presently. The
commentary makes it clear, however, that we don't intend to depart from the present law.
Right.
I mean, go back to all the old cases.
No, I did. Well, I don't know. I think it's pretty clear to standard, for as clear as you can get.
George,
it's my turn.
You bet. You earned the right to speak for the rest of the afternoon.
The concept here strikes me as being an anomaly. The concept of the, we call it time, especially with respect to impossibility. You recall, all this hasn't reached the commission yet, the general law on the subject of impossibility in this state is that if you try to commit a crime, and you think of a case where a person, a doctor tried to abort a woman, he believed the pregnancy was in one and broke in two, but it turned out to be that he was wrong. And his defense was that he couldn't have been convicted of the crime because he made a mistake. And the law is, well, that's too bad, you're still guilty of the attempt to commit the crime. And I think that's a good rule, and it's a rule that's been adopted with respect to both crimes in the subcommittee. Now, isn't this really the same kind of crime? A person is on the stand and is lying, is attempting to specifically tell him a falsehood to influence the administration of justice. It just so happens, it turns out, that what he lied about is not, quote, material, unquote. Now, I understand this to be the law, and has been the law, back in the ancient days of common law, that if it's not material, even though that person, through his specific intent, was trying to subvert the purposes of the criminal justice system, that he's not guilty. I wonder, then, in the face of all the law, I'm wondering out loud if materiality, in fact, is not broad enough in this case. Now, we were told in the Model Penal Code comment that hearsay can still be material because it affects the outcome. Admissibility of the evidence question does not affect whether it's material as far as the outcome goes. It still can be material in the sense that you can be convicted of perjury. But it says that if it's not material, in this area where you tried to lie, you tried to do something you should not do, indicating a personality that is trying to accomplish something that we don't want to have accomplished in trials. Now, I've just been thinking out loud. I pose the question, do we really want to require that to be perjury, that it must be material, mistaken?
Well, what if a guy just lies about his address because he doesn't want anybody to know what his address is because he's doesn't want to be living there or something?
What about the 35-year-old woman that says she's 29,
yeah.
Guilty of false swearing anyway.
They're not really trying to have the outcome on the administration of justice. They just, you know, maybe somebody doesn't want to know who they're shacking with or something. So they give a false address.
maybe you could circulate that cartoon around again, you might get more takers.
Sign it in.
Well, I think what George says, though, is well taken, really. He's not, I mean, I think what he's saying is that we're giving the the defendant the benefit of the doubt with a broad definition of material, isn't that what you're saying? Because it's just, he was just lucky that his lie turned out to not affect the outcome of the proceedings.
You're saying that we should retain the definition of material as it's here in substance 2, is that right?
Yeah, and then raise the question of whether really it includes enough. It's pretty broad. It has construed cases.
What George is saying is the definition of material could also include anything that the witness may think is material.
Yeah, I can
know that. Well, you know, on section 5, page 25, that defense is taken away from that.
The implication that I have raised is that if that person gets away with this, then he's thereby encouraged to pursue a socially dangerous course in the future. He says, well, I'm going to lie in this case and get him to escape with impunity, and I need to lie, and the law says that's all right.
You wouldn't include, though, the 35-year-old woman who's 29.
Well, sure, but that wouldn't affect the outcome.
Well, but George is saying that.
I'm just wondering whether you mean that. Yeah, that's right. It's a very hard question for me to respond to that. Obviously, I don't want to put a 35-year-old person in prison when she was 29.
Well, the basic reason, though, for having a social sanction against perjury is it does outcome the, of course, affects the outcome of the
basic crime. It's still a crime.
Evidence which has been ruled inadmissible.
What you're doing is leaving it up to the witness himself to decide whether it's going to affect the outcome of the process.
No, it's the judge.
I know, I say the verdict.
But he's saying any other statement period while under oath.
That's what I am saying. Yeah. Any false statement you make, especially in court, you're not going to be punishable as a perjury. Whether or not it affects the outcome of the process.
Well, if we read that in connection with the definition of statement, we've got real problems. When we come to opinion, we need to do this. I think that those are all shot at. Either it's material and opinion, or immaterial and opinion, or fact and immaterial.
What you're saying, George, is it's a matter of public policy. People should be discouraged from lying under oath. We should adopt a policy of making any lying under oath, as long as it's willful and contains the elements of culpability, make it punishable as perjury, right?
And we've done that.
Well, we've
done that with a false statement.
We've done that.
The question is whether you're going to make it a felony in the
courtroom. No, it shouldn't be. I don't know.
We've done that.
The only issue here, George, is whether it's a
felony. Put a different name on it.
It's a false warning that covers that.
All right.
John,
yeah.
Why didn't you tell me that you should not think out loud?
Well, I've done it.
You've seen Mr. Johnson operate this morning.
Lee Cox has been doing it continually.
But, Mr. Chairman, look at it this way. Just look how prosecution-oriented George Platt has become.
The only thing that scares me is that I'm getting more liberal. I have a question. That is that we talk in terms of perjury as only being people that make false sworn statements. And we have lots of people that refuse to take the oath and that are take the affirmation. And the present Oregon statute